an Amazon Echo killer, a FaceTime replacement, and other surprises from Google I.O., plus the future of Lumia and an update on that live-streamed birth on Facebook. All that and a whole lot more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1516, recorded Wednesday, May 18th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Igloo software. Igloo is an intranet you will actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news. We roll it up. We hug it. We throw it over our shoulder. We do all the things.
Hello.
Hello from yesterday. I couldn't. Yes. I listened to the show and I just loved listening to the tech news in the pillow and laying down.
Sorry. Yeah, it was weird. It was weird.
I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Good to see you, Megan. How's it going back in the studio?
It's going good. We miss you here, and I was worried about you. It's very hot where you are at the Shoreline Amphitheater.
Little sunny. I'm actually in the Googleplex right now. I'm in a secret bunker inside the Googleplex doing the show from here. And then after this, I'm going to run over and do a little press event, which Sundar Pichai has been known to stop by from time to time. So maybe I can talk to him a little bit, which usually ends up me being, you know, making a fool of myself, basically, because I don't know. What do you ask someone like Sundar Pichai when you finally have the opportunity to ask them something? I don't know. It's like I feel like I have to have this plan in advance, and I haven't planned anything. So.
Okay. Just don't tell him that you use an iPad.
Well, that would be true. I don't really use it very much.
What if that is really what you say? Because, you know, when like you just walk up like, I have an iPad. I'm sorry.
But what I really want to know if ever I talk with Sundar Pichai again is whether he knows that on All About Android, we have a jib-jab animation of him that we imitate him on. And I doubt he does, but I really want him to know that we do that. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I don't know if he'd be very endeared by that.
Well, let's get started on the news. You are, of course, at the developers conference, Google I.O. They made lots of announcements. I want to start with the gadget I'm most excited about, Google Home. It's a so-called Alexa killer. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I mean, it's exactly like what you're describing here. It's a little, hardware device, kind of looks like an air freshener device. The colorful bottom half. And, you know, it plugs in. It has Google's assistant kind of capability, which more or less is kind of like, I don't know, kind of an expansion of Google Now, essentially. It's all of its kind of voice query knowledge graph, you know, tied into voice commands, more conversational, all this kind of stuff. So they're basically taking the Google Search, Google Now approach and putting it into this device called Google Home. And it does some really cool things, right? Like it has the ability to control and, you know, cast around music. And podcasts, of course, podcasts are now part of Play Music. So you can listen to all those things through the device. It has a really nice kind of woofer tweeter setup in the bottom. So supposedly the sound is really solid. And I'm really hoping that I can see one sometime so I can get a sense of how it sounds. They say it fills the room. So it does that. You can also ask it with a new command, not OK Google, which is what we use on phones, which is what I just set off a bunch of phones to do a search query just by saying that out loud. Now here it's ask Google's or hey Google is what it is. So it's like, hey Google, blah, 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 whatever your query happens to be. And you can send it a search query that way. But a big part of this is, of course, the conversational aspect. You know, it's not as much about like figuring out the syntax necessarily of how you get it to do a specific thing. They're making it a little bit more conversational. Things, knowledge kind of stacks, queries kind of stack on top of each other. So it can kind of look in reverse and know that you were talking about that person when you asked ask for who is he later. That sort of stuff. Really, really neat. It also actually controls home automation stuff. So, you know, they played a video that kind of showed off some of like a scenario, essentially a family scenario of this family that is all in on the Google Assistant, Google Home technology. And, you know, right when they're leaving the house, they say goodbye and all of the smart lights and, you know, all the smart devices kind of power down as they leave. Different stuff like that.
That is really interesting. I mean, I can see they didn't announce a cost, so I could see where that could be something that they were really aiming to hit a price point way below the Amazon Echo. And the sound, like you mentioned, that's some people's complaint is that the Echo doesn't, the speakers are no good. But now, you know, we have the Echo Dot, which I have, which connects to any Bluetooth speaker. So that's fine. Podcasts, all I can listen to podcasts, but it's not a great interaction, actually, with the Echo, because I'll play one. They play from TuneIn, but you can't just start them again. Like you have to, sometimes you can and sometimes you can't, but it doesn't find your place. So I could see how they would probably have that integrated. But, you know, there's so much. I mean, even though I have an iPhone, there's so much of Google's products that I love, like, you know, Google, you know, Inbox and Calendar. And we use all the Google products here. I mean, we're going to talk in a little bit about their new messaging. But that's what I would love to be able to do with a home assistant, just like read my messages, like while I'm cooking or, you know, whatever. Respond to my messages, and I have to believe that that's going to be part of it too.
Oh, for sure. Yes. And I read this after the fact, but basically it syncs to one Google account at launch, and eventually they're going to open it up to multiple accounts. I don't know how you do that gracefully in, let's say, a family setting, but there is that. So taking kind of Google Now on the phone as an example, you know, Google Now has the ability to look into your email, let's say, and you know, pull out like your travel arrangements so that it knows on today, you know, that you've got a flight at 3 p.m. or whatever. This is going to have a lot of that same kind of ability to kind of scan that stuff and be able to, you know, you can give it a command of, you know, what time is my flight tonight? And it'll know because it's kind of pulling that information out of your account. Again, just one account at launch. And this sounds like what you're talking about, though. That's a big part of what that'll be.
So what about Google Assistant? That was something they announced too. Can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, well, I mean, Google Assistant is actually a pretty important component to Google Home. Google Assistant really is just kind of like the overarching kind of next step, I think, of their voice command kind of foundation, essentially. They say 20% of all queries. I thought this was interesting. 20% of all queries to Google are voice queries. So people are not shy at using their voice to make these, you know, these search queries or these commands or all that kind of stuff. So really, Google Assistant is about kind of taking those voice commands and moving it more into what I was just talking about, kind of the conversational aspect of things, giving it a lot more power to kind of be something that you talk to, almost as if you're conversing with someone as opposed. I mean, I think they named it kind of appropriately. You know, it's like it's your assistant. And it is interesting that they didn't give their assistant an actual name like Siri or Alexa or whatever. This is, you know, the Google Assistant.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it, like, OK Google and Google Now, they were always, they don't really have the fancy names.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wonder how much we really want Google to be assisting us, to know all this. I mean, you're there, so presumably there's a lot of journalists there, Google developers. But was there much talk of like, oh, this is not going to work because people do not want Google in their house listening to them?
No, I didn't hear much of that at all. And I think, you know, a part of that is because, A, we've gotten really used to the idea of using our mobile devices in this way, right? In a way that, you know, it's smart enough to kind of know and present things that you want, but it's also powerful enough to be able to kind of process the things that you request over time. We're already kind of doing this. And this, you know, Google Assistant is really the next step. Bring it into the home. You know, Amazon to a large degree has already proven that, at least for a certain, you know, a certain group, a certain population, people want that. And so I think a company like Google coming in and providing theirs, I mean, that's pretty strong competition to the Echo. Amazon has a good thing going, but like using myself as the example, I've been seriously on the fence of getting an Echo, and I'm not going to get one now because I'm going to wait for the Google Home device to do it, because I already know how smart Google is with breaking down all that stuff into contextual ways that are helpful to me, whether I actively, you know, pursue a path or not. It presents it to me, and many times that's helpful, and I didn't have to do anything about it. So I trust Google in this regard.
So I wonder, I mean, would you pay more than, how much would you pay for this
Google
Home? I'll just throw this at you. I mean, because I think that I can't exactly remember what I paid for my Echo. I think it was around $200.
Yeah, I think that's about the price.
And I think that is the price now. Would you pay more than that for something like this?
I don't know. Honestly, I would guess in my mind that it would be somewhere around the same price, that it would be somewhere around $200. And I think if Google really wants this to be something that's competitive, I don't think that they have to undershoot Amazon in this regard, because I think they have a lot going for themselves with this technology. But I would guess somewhere around $200. But I mean, it's totally a guess, because they gave absolutely no clue.
Right, and they said it would launch later this year. I feel like on Twitter there's like this palpable disappointment of like all these things, but they're not going to be released till later this year.
Yeah.
Is that how it felt there? Do people get frustrated by that?
Well, I mean, I think if you've been to a few IOs, you know that kind of just happens. More and more, we're kind of seeing that kind of, you know, on that end, or to that end rather. There was no giveaway this year, which Google I/O has been very known for doing this whole giveaway. And, you know, we've heard the past couple of years that they've been kind of, you know, that there was the thought that they might shy away from that a little bit to kind of focus the event a little bit more on just being about the developers and the information and the knowledge, as opposed to people just wanting to get a ticket to get these, you know, these hardwares. But even if there was a giveaway, like this year there really isn't a whole lot to do it. The Google Home might be the device, but it's coming later this year. And some of the other things that, you know, we're talking about, not out yet, going to be coming later. It's a little disappointing because, of course, we want access to it right now. But it still gives a sense of the roadmap, and that's also very important for this event.
So let's talk about it. Something else they announced that's not available yet. Allo, spelled A-L-L-O, but not L-O, but Allo, like the stuff you put on your skin from the plant. It's a new messaging app. What do we know so far about Allo?
Well, this is a new messaging app, and we'll talk about that in a second. But it does some cool stuff, the things that you kind of expect out of a messaging app, right? It does the stickers. You can, you know, it has access to the emoji and all that kind of stuff. So this is stuff that we've had access to. You can like make the text larger, smaller, and they made a big deal of demonstrating that with the single finger swipe, which I was kind of okay. So that's like a small feature, but wow, did a lot of people clap for that? I'm very, very surprised that happened. But beyond that, beyond the kind of the basics of this, what it is it's smart messaging. So, and this actually, again, ties into what we're talking about with Google Assistant. It's taking all of that contextual knowledge, the things that people are used to seeing, especially Android users are used to seeing in things like Google Now and in things like Inbox with AI kind of churning on smart replies and all this kind of stuff, taking that stuff and integrating it into a messaging app. Which, you know, maybe I buried the lead, but they will also have smart replies in messaging. So this would be the first time that they would do that. And smart replies essentially, you know, it's part of that AI engine. So if you've used it in Inbox, it's basically offering up answers to query, you know, to, let's say, a message, you send me a message, it would offer up answers that it knows I am likely to respond with based on my history, and kind of piecing that together. And that includes smart replies to photos. So they kind of showed off where there was like image recognition of a dog, and you put, you know, someone would post a photo of a dog to another person inside of Allo, and the smart reply would be like, oh, that dog is cute, or I think it even went down to the breed. And, you know, this is no secret. They've been doing this for a long time with Google Photos now, this kind of deep analyzation of that stuff. So, so interesting. There's also like playing games with the chatbot, although I don't think they're calling them chatbots. But what I realized out of this is they're kind of turning Google turning Google into a person, like moving Google away from search and turning it into an actual person, because you can kind of converse with Google in the chat setting. Do people want to do that? I don't know. But I think what we're seeing more and more is Google is just their big strategy is put their search in all the places so that you no longer have to go out of where you're at, out of your experience to get to their search. Just access your search from where you are.
Yeah, I think that is the smart replies is a killer feature. Like, I mean, because, you know, there's so many different email apps you can use. And I've used so many of them. And we'll be talking about Microsoft a little bit later. Like, I loved Outlook on the iPhone. But, you know, once smart replies became something that I used regularly in inbox, like that is my email program. And I won't use anything else. It's really easy and efficient. And yeah, so I love the idea that it would be in a chat program as well.
Yeah, so they've got so there's Allo, and then there's also Duo, which is another app kind of along the lines of taking something that they've already been doing and creating a new app for it. In this regard, it's video call app. So, you know, we've had Hangouts Video for quite a while now. Now it looks like kind of the new effort is this Duo video call app. It's built by the WebRTC team. So as far as I could tell, part of the, at least some of the technology was built on WebRTC. And, you know, beyond that, it kind of looked like a video app. It has a cool little feature called Knock Knock, which essentially means that if I hit the button to call you, and hopefully this is obvious to me when I'm calling you, but when I hit the button to call you, you pick up your phone and you can actually see me, you know, and my motion and all that kind of stuff. You see me, you don't hear me while the app is ringing. So maybe that's a reason for you to pick up. I don't know, depending on what I'm doing. Maybe I'm juggling. I don't know.
See, okay, so that's what I didn't fully understand. So a lot of people also were talking about how this seems like it could get used for all the wrong reasons. But so I was going to use FaceTime because that's the language I speak. It's like FaceTime, sure. Right? Sure. So, but then you see, if you're calling me, then I see you, but you don't see me before I decide to pick up, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, yes. Because that would be a nightmare. So, but I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm sure there are many nefarious ways to use apps like this. it's rewriting what we know about our experience in making a phone call or making a video call, though. So there must hopefully there's a little bit of education inside the app that when you go to call, like, don't go picking your nose getting ready for the call, you know, because mm-hmm. they're going to see it. Maybe that'll be the reason that they'll pick up. I don't know.
Yeah. So Duo, is Duo going to be also available on iOS or just Android?
That's a good question. I don't remember seeing availability for platform on either Allo or Duo. I don't really know. I don't know the answer to that one. I'm sorry.
Because that would be interesting if it's something that was somehow better than FaceTime.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. Because I don't know where I stand on, you know, on video calling. You know, and back like 30 years ago, it was just like, that's the future. Like video calling was every Star Trek thing you could see, you know. But now it's like, I don't use it regularly. I don't like it. Like, I would prefer just to talk. I mean, I would prefer just to text. I would prefer just smart replies. I prefer the least amount of interaction as possible. A computer telling me how to reply.
Sure.
But I mean, I can see, and also younger generations, I think, really like this and are getting used to it. And so it might just be something that is used more regularly.
Yeah, well, and another part of this also is that the apps are tied to your phone number, not your Google account. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a separation there to kind of open up, you know, remove some of the friction. Yes, it will be launching on iOS. It launches on iOS and Android this summer.
I would say it'd have to, because otherwise you'd be in the same situation. You know, couldn't call me. How could you have like a calling? I mean, that's what FaceTime is. But I don't think it could go the other way around, that Google would come up with an app that you could only call people who have Android phones.
Yeah, except for outliers. That's not really Google's strategy these days. They're cool about being on both platforms with most of their stuff, especially when they want to create critical mass, which is what you kind of need, you know, want in an app like this.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to VR. Clay Bavor is Google's new VR hire. We've been talking about that a lot and how he's really changing the game. He introduced something called Daydream, high quality mobile virtual reality. What did you learn about that?
First, I had to remember that this is a new Daydream and not the old Daydream that Android used to have, which was like a screensaver thing that would happen when you plugged it into power source. So they used to have a product called Daydream in Android. Now they have a new product called Daydream in Android. And there you go. So this time it's VR. Essentially, they say high quality mobile VR. What they've done, and they didn't really announce a whole lot of new additions to Android N because we've had N in a developer preview around for a couple of months. But this was one of the main changes that they announced. And essentially what it is it's support for VR at the platform level. Basically it's three components. It's creating a kind of a spec for phone devices and people, you know, OEMs who are creating devices called Daydream Ready, so that they can make sure, you know, that the hardware underneath is capable of running VR on the system level. It's releasing a reference design for both headset and controller. So it has a little controller as part of this. So it's not just this goggle that you put on, you know, like the Google Cardboard. I got Cardboard Part 3 today.
Well, you said there was no giveaway. Come on.
Oh, well, I don't know. Here we go. It's a cardboard is the giveaway. 2 years ago, this is exciting. We've had this for a couple of years now. I also got a T-shirt. But there you go. So they've got the spec, you know, or the reference design for headset and controller. First available kind of hardware is going to hit the market this fall. So this is another one of those things that's happening somewhere down the line. But the controller design is cool. It's got a little touchpad that's clickable. It's also got an orientation sensor, so it knows kind of where you are and, you know, you can reach out and pick up something kind of similar to what we have with the other VR platforms. And then the final component of that is, of course, app support. Both inside Google Play and the apps themselves, and you know, just a lot of partners that are in early, essentially to give some content right out of the gate.
So the Daydream phones will be available this fall, I guess. Is that what they were saying?
I have to imagine, yeah, probably. I mean, I'm guessing they didn't give a date for Android N's release, but this is baked into Android N, and I have to imagine they're going to have something when Android N, you know, releases, and that's probably going to be timed with the new Nexus devices. It all kind of happens that way usually. Anything can happen, though, so you never know. But I'm guessing end of summer, early fall, we're probably going to see a big dump of, you know, all this kind of stuff. The first kind of iterations, the first experience with all of them.
Mm-hmm. And they're crowdsourcing the name for Google N, but they reserve the right to choose the winner. So sadly, no namey McName face.
Well, yeah, so they're kind of crowdsourcing. I mean, they pretty much say in their guidelines, solely intended to be for entertainment purposes. Mm-hmm. The name you submit will not be judged. There will be no prizes or compensation awarded to any participant. That doesn't mean that they're not going to pick from the pool. But yes, it definitely doesn't mean that they're going to automatically go with the one that got the most votes. So, but it's nice to kind of pitch in. I do think that this probably, you know, N is a hard letter to find desserts for. You go search like previous letters. Like, it's always fun in the Android world to like guess what the dessert's going to be on the next Android version release. And in previous years, it's been pretty easy to find ones that you think are pretty much shoo-ins. This time it's not so easy. So I understand why they're doing it. They need options. They need ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not just dessert, right? Isn't it just a tasty snack?
Yeah, it depends on how you interpret it, I suppose. I feel like everything that they've trotted out is dessert-like, though. Well, honeycomb. I guess you don't sit down to a plate of honeycomb. Mm-mm. But you do sit down to a bowl of honeycombs.
You do. Okay. I do not.
I do not anymore, but it was a time when I did.
Did they announce anything about Wear 2.0?
Yeah, Wear 2.0, definitely. So the next iteration of Android Wear, watch faces that can show data from any app. So you can have a watch face pulling in, you know, like a to-do list into the interface from an app that you have installed if the developer has made the done the code, you know, behind the scenes to allow for that. Also some handwriting recognition. So there was a time when Google was saying that, you know, they want you typing on your device. It's all about voice. And now, you know, they're including handwriting. But I think this is a feature that was on Apple Watch, I believe, where you can write and stuff and whatever.
Oh, so, you can draw, but it doesn't recognize, it doesn't turn it into words or anything.
Oh, Okay, well, then there you go. I don't know how much you'd use it, but I do think it's better than having a keyboard on your tiny little watch screen. So there's that. And standalone app support, basically, with like the direct network access via Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, or cellular, so that you can leave your phone home, which we already knew a little bit about that, but kind of expanded support on that.
So did I miss anything? Was there anything else that we needed to know about?
Well, I think one of the main things that was pretty awesome that I heard most people talking about after the fact was the native apps launching into your experience even when you don't have the app installed on your device. So let's say you do, and the example they gave was really good. I can't remember, I think it was B&H or whatever, but you know, there have been many times where I install an app for, let's say, a store or whatever to do this one thing, and it's good for shopping. You know, Amazon actually, in my opinion, is a prime example of this. I don't always need the Amazon app on my phone, but sometimes it's better to get my results through the Amazon app. So I might install it in order to do these things instead of like dealing with the web browser. Well, in this case, you could do a search for something like B&H Photo, and it will actually stream that part of the code from the Android app to your phone pretty quickly. I don't know what pretty quickly is, so that remains to be seen. And so you get the app experience without having downloaded the app. And then if you like it, you just tap install and it puts it on in the background and you're good. But very interesting stuff. It kind of blurs the lines between search, you know, in a mobile web versus apps that you're installing.
Cool. Well, there's nothing else is going to be live streamed from there. So every bit of information we get from now on has to come from you, Jason. So.
Well, yeah, they are live streaming little events here and there. They have a full kind of roster, but they don't live stream everything. So I will do my best. Apparently tomorrow is a pretty big Chrome OS presentation, and they may have ran out of time for the Chrome OS stuff in the keynote today. And I think it's going to be pretty important stuff. So I'm definitely going to be there. And follow me on Twitter, I suppose, if you want to check that out. Awesome. I'll be tweeting.
You'll be tweeting about what's going on technically and various health issues you may or may not have.
Whether I happen to have a Pepto-Bismol to quiet down my stomach, yes, I will be tweeting about that too. Sorry.
Well, after the break, we have got some more smartphone news, but this time from Microsoft. But first, let's take a minute to thank Epson, the sponsor of this episode. Epson's revolutionary EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The new EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. It features an innovative refillable ink tank, earning it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. The EcoTank ET4550 comes with enough ink to print up to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages, equivalent to about 50 ink cartridge sets. You're loaded and ready to print for up to 2 years. Powered by Epson's leading-edge precision core technology, it delivers high-speed, vivid colors and laser-quality black text, plus auto two-sided printing, a 30-page auto document feeder, and easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value with ultra-low-cost replacement ink bottles. Epson recently released their Creative Print app, making it easier than ever to preserve your Instagram and Facebook photos. Download the app to create personalized photo collages, custom greeting cards, stationery, and coloring book templates. You can also print photos directly onto CDs or DVDs. Be creative on the go. Print from your mobile device to a variety of compatible Epson all-in-one printers within your wireless network. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, office, or work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support. So today, Microsoft announced that it had sold off its feature phone brands, software, and services, but it will continue to develop Windows 10 Mobile and support Lumia devices. Joining us to talk about what this means is Brad Sams from Thurrott.com and Petri.com. Welcome back to the show, Brad.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always fun to be back. It's always fun to be here.
So you wrote today that Microsoft has closed the book on its Nokia assets, ending in what you call disaster. Many will agree. So what parts did they sell and who did they sell it to?
All right. So let's just kind of take a step back here. A couple years ago, Microsoft bought Nokia mobile assets for over $7 billion. And through that time, they've kind of whittled things down. They wrote off nearly, well, they did write off everything. And then today we learned that they sold their feature phone business to a subsidiary of Foxconn called FIH Mobile, and along with a new group called HMD Global, which is based out of Finland, basically right next door to where the old Nokia plant is. And Microsoft said, hey, you know what? We got $350 million for this stuff. And they offloaded their feature phone business to these two new companies to start selling them under the Nokia brand. And also at the same time, Nokia announced a new exclusive license to, I believe it's this HMD group, to now that they can actually build tablets and smartphones using the Nokia brand name. So it was many things. Microsoft dumped feature phones, and now Nokia brand has essentially become the Westinghouse of everything again. It's just a licensable name. Now, it's not actually the actual Nokia we're used to, but we'll see how this plays out.
So when they say they're going to support Lumia phones, what do you think they mean by that?
Yeah, so this is really what people were kind of freaking out today. The $350 million, to be honest, was just kind of like, here's some money, and hey, we at least made some money on this terrible acquisition. But the way they worded everything, that they're going to continue to support existing products and build out Windows 10 Mobile. I had heard several times, and other people have heard this as well, that the Lumia brand is actually going to cease to exist for Microsoft. What that means, it's pretty much face value. They're not going to build Lumia phones anymore. I don't think that means they're not going to build Windows phones in the semi-distant future. But what they're actually doing is killing off that brand name, because I think there's a negative connotation with it. Lumias haven't sold well. Lumias haven't performed well. So why should they keep propping up this asset that they bought that's no longer really an asset? So I think we're done with the Lumia lines, and, you know, pour one out for it, and we'll see what the next chapter holds for Microsoft, which, from what I'm hearing from internal sources, we won't see anything from Microsoft of significance until next year.
So I know part of this too is kind of this involvement of Android devices into the whole formula, I suppose. How is that happening?
So I have a lot of really interesting thoughts about Microsoft and Android, but we won't go too far down there. But essentially, we're going to see Nokia-branded Android phones. Now, this isn't completely new. Actually, under the Microsoft Windows umbrella, Nokia did release a couple Android phones, but they were really stripped down, and they only had Microsoft-related apps. So essentially, what I think we're going to see here, and I honestly hope it doesn't go too far down this route, is we're going to see a new crop of Nokia Android phones, but I don't know if they're going to be the super premium phones that everybody's kind of wanting, because it's not, remember, it's not actually Nokia that's building them. It's this new company that has licensed the name. And so I don't know how this is going to work out for them. You know much better than I do about how saturated the Android market is. Look at BlackBerry. They're a perfect example. They pivoted to Android, and I don't think it's working out too well for them. So I can't imagine that just because there's Nokia and Android, they're going to essentially swamp the market here.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Android fans who have ever said, oh, why isn't there a Nokia, line on Android, is pining for kind of the design of the premium Nokia devices that are out there. So if it's not going to be of that caliber, and it's not going to kind of follow the traditional design language, which is what people are kind of would hope for, I would imagine, then they might have a challenge on their hands.
Yeah, they really want that. I mean, Nokia in the Windows phone world made a name for themselves early on for having exceptional cameras. Remember, they had a 41-megapixel camera in a phone, and they were dishing out 20 megapixels. They called it PureView. I don't think we're going to see that in this new Nokia. I really don't, because they don't have the IP to support that. Mm-hmm. So I don't see how they're going to differentiate themselves. Potentially maybe go back to the polycarbonate, which, let's not kid ourselves here, that's plastic. High-end phones, I don't know. It's a really tough nut to crack to break into the Android space, much like it is in the mobile phone space. This is why Microsoft essentially has reeled everything back. They were losing, I think last year, 13 cents for every phone they sold. Like, that's not a sustainable business model.
Not at all.
So, I mean, what happened to Windows 10 Mobile last January, I guess January 2015? I mean, that was the big thing. Like, that was their big, when they announced Windows 10, that was the thing. It was going to be across all your devices, your phone. And I mean, what happened?
So that's a really good question. Here's the thing. The Windows 10 Mobile build that is shipping right now is not great. It works. It's fine. It's not there's nothing special about Windows Phone. That's the problem. And people who have an iPhone are very dedicated to it. You know why? Because it works. It doesn't have to be overly flashy. It's got good hardware and it works. Same with Android. People like Android because it's customizable. So if you want something that's very plain Jane and just gets the job done, you want an iPhone. If you want something that's customizable and works, you get an Android. Where does that leave Windows Phone? Windows Phone tried to live in the middle ground where you had locked hardware. Microsoft initially said, if you're going to build a Windows Phone, it has to be in certain requirements. And then this is where I think they went wrong. They said, you're going to get updates. They said, that's going to be the difference. You're going to have size options and updates. That's something you don't get with Android, guaranteed, unless you buy a Nexus. And iPhone is locked into a size. But here's the problem. If you bought a Windows Phone 7 device, it was not upgradable to Windows Phone 8. And guess what? About 50% of the people using a Windows Phone 8 device can't get a Windows Phone 10 upgrade. I have two Lumia icons at my house that Microsoft initially said, hey, we're not going to upgrade this. And these were the flagship devices on Verizon. They said, we're not going to do it. Now, they did reel that back a little bit and say, okay, we'll consider it. But that's not the message you send. So the promise of updates never materialized because they burned a lot of the fanboys. And then you have the app situation, which was terrible. And now it's somewhere slightly less than terrible to, I put it into like the palatable stage because you have third-party alternatives for everything. But when you combine these things, it's not a very compelling argument why choose Windows Phone. You got to remember that people associate Windows for the most part, and I don't put this lightly, like negatively. They're used to the Windows XP or Microsoft forcing them to do things or viruses. And Microsoft is having a challenge getting over that hump. Now, they've made some ground. But when you pile all these things together, it's I've asked this Microsoft many times. They said, why Windows Phone? And they say, well, it's great in the enterprise. But you know what? You know what enterprise customers want? Enterprise users want an iPhone. They don't want a Windows Phone. And the days of when the IT pro made all the decisions for the company, that doesn't exist anymore. It's more user-driven, and the users aren't wanting Windows Phone, so they didn't get business adoption. They screwed over people with updates. Their app situation wasn't great. If anybody can tell me why to buy a Windows Phone today, I would love to hear it, but there's no compelling argument against a Windows Phone or an iOS and Android device. It just doesn't exist.
So what about the Surface? The Surface is kind of the product that is, people like it. I mean, they're big fans. Yeah. And then we hear of this rumored Surface phone. Is that something that you know anything about?
So, yeah. So we've heard some tinklings around. Microsoft Surface division is very locked down. Big credit to them. They're very good at keeping secrets inside this division, mostly until things get closer to launch, like most companies. So what we're hearing from the Surface phone, it's a Panos design device. So he's the father, the godfather, whatever you want to call him, of the Surface products. He's designed, he's leading them up, and he's supposedly designing this device. Now, we have asked myself, Paul Thrott, Mary Jo Foley, everybody has asked many times. They said, what could be in a, you know, quote unquote Surface phone that's really going to make people buy it? Because it's not the software, it's not the apps. What can Microsoft do? And so I honestly hope that they go crazy with it. I hope that they put an Intel chip in there, but that's been stunted since Intel killed off some of their mobile entries, mobile chips, because they're not making any money here. But we're hearing that these devices should show up sometime in the spring of 2017, which, again, if you're a Windows Phone fan, if Microsoft is pretty much saying, hey, we're not going to build out any new premium Lumias this year, you're going to have to wait until next year. It's a big waiting game, and people don't like to wait. And so you've got to use a 950 for at least a year. And if you're on Verizon, this doesn't work on it, so good luck with that. And that's 80 million people in the U.S. who can't buy a Windows Phone or a decent Windows Phone. So, again, we're in this waiting cycle with Windows Phone for a device that may or may not blow our minds, with features that we haven't figured out that would actually help a device sell, other than potentially running an Intel chip. But even that's not assured anymore. So look for that in the spring of 2017 and try to get in the mindset of Microsoft. What can they do that's actually going to sell a device? And don't forget, people online were saying, you know what, the first Surface phone is going to be a magnificent device. Let's talk about the first Surface that actually came out was Surface RT. Then we had RT2. Both RT was a disaster. RT2 was not great. It wasn't until the third iteration that we actually got a usable device. So I hope we don't see this with the Surface phone either, because then we're looking 2019 before we get a really great Windows phone. And I'm eagerly awaiting all the people who are going to harass me through email and saying, Brad, you're so negative on Windows Phone. But it's the honest truth. It really, really is. Microsoft completely missed this segment, and they are struggling to make any presence known other than delivering excellent apps for iOS and Android.
So I agree with you on the apps. Like, they're fantastic. I think that I'm a huge fan of Satya Nadella. Like, I think he's really smart. And, you know, you hear a lot of inklings of, like, you know, the era of apps is over. Like, it's bots. It's, you know, it's, you know, Google announced today, like, there's apps that you don't really even have to install. Like, what if he sees further into the future than we do, and that apps are really something that is going away? Do you think that might be true?
So I'm a big fan of Nadella. I think he has done an exceptional job, and I firmly believe that he never would have bought these Nokia assets based on his maneuvers with the company and just his mentality. But I think Nadella does have very good insight. I mean, he started up Azure inside of Microsoft. He was a big proponent of the cloud platform, and that was a big bet. That's probably one of the reasons why he's CEO. And he was pushing these bots. I'm not quite sold on the bot mentality yet, and we'll see how that materializes. But what I do believe in is that these virtualized apps that will, very similar to what Google announced today, Microsoft has a product called AppView that allows you to virtualize apps. I think this is a bigger thing coming down the pipe than anything else. Because if you can run these apps in the cloud, much like what Google showed today, you don't need a powerful PC anymore. All you need is just a screen and a keyboard, and everything else is up in the cloud, and it comes down to your machine. So I think they are, it's one of those things that you see multiple companies doing. You're like, yeah, they all see where this is going. But the problem is Microsoft doesn't have a mobile play yet to actually execute upon that strategy. Google does. Google has hundreds of, or probably in the billions of devices, I would imagine, or if not getting close to it, out in the world running their OS. Microsoft doesn't have that yet. So it's going to be interesting to see how these web apps or these virtualized apps that give you just what you need through a browser actually materialize in the mobile space for both companies.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for joining us. If anyone out there wants to criticize anyone for their negative attitude toward Microsoft, please do so. Brad is at BDSams on Twitter. I'm just kidding. It's wonderful to have someone that really knows the knowledge, uses the products, is inside, really asking the questions of Microsoft. And so thank you so much, Brad. Where is the best place for people to follow your work online?
You know what? The best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm probably overly active. Just hit me up on Twitter at BDSams, and I'll get back to you.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you.
So here's an update to a story we talked about on Monday. A man live streamed his baby's birth on Facebook because he could do that. But now the man says that he didn't know he was broadcasting the video live. He thought he was just sending it to family and friends. The woman giving birth says she knew her partner was filming but did not know that he was streaming it live to the public. The video is still available, and the woman told Time people, I think she told them that she does not want the video taken down. The baby was not available for comment about the situation, presumably also didn't give his or her okay to it. What do you think, Jason?
Well, I guess if she is choosing to keep it up, like, it would be one thing if she really wanted to remove it, and then I guess that would say something. But she's, you know, it kind of speaks volumes that she's okay with keeping it up. I think he, you know, like I said, I watched parts of it, and the only reason that I even watched the end was because he, like he said here, he kept it PG, which at least he did that, and I'm happy it didn't go, you know, any further in that regard, and that's probably why she's okaying for it to be up there. But he makes a good point. We share so many things on the internet that are just kind of, you know, it's negativity, it's whatever. This is something positive. So hey, if they're cool with it, then I suppose it's a beautiful thing. It should be celebrated, you know.
Well, it's interesting because I think a lot of people have that problem with Facebook. Like, you suddenly realize, oh, I didn't just share that with my friends.
Right.
I shared it with everyone.
That's a challenge here, right? Because I think that's a big part of what he was talking about. The guy who filmed the video, he said about 15 minutes or so in, he realized the viewer count was, you know, much larger, in the thousands, you know, beyond just his friends and family. And he had to really kind of ask himself, like, what do I do now? He thought he was just streaming it to his friends and family. And, you know, maybe that's a miscommunication of the platform and something to be addressed there.
But then he says, you know, that after presumably when he saw that it was 1,000 viewers, he understood at that point and said, well, I thought, but then, like you said, he said it was something positive. I just kept going. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, that is hard because it's like, it's all of our issues. I think when we're sharing things online, it's like, oh, we have that. Should I? And then it's the feedback loop, the like, oh, people are liking it. People. And so you think, okay, well, privacy out the window because I want to be told that you like what I'm sharing, whether it be my birth or a picture of whatever.
Yep, sure.
All right, well, we have an email. Do you want to read the email that we got?
Yeah, let's do that. So we heard, let's see here. This is in regards to our ongoing conversation about lowering your phone bill. Hidari Mack actually wrote in to TNT at twit.tv and said, Becky mentioned that sometimes it can be cheaper to purchase a new phone through a contract rather than buying the phone outright. There are some places, such as here in Canada, where the phone company can change the terms of your contract while you are still locked into it, including what they charge and offer month to month. Unless your state laws ensure that the contract is truly a two-way contract and your local provider treats their contract holders fairly and consistently, cell phone contracts can be pricier than they first appear. And that's the end of the email. And yeah, that would really kind of stink to buy into a contract, think you're getting one thing, think you're saving a certain amount of money, and then have the kind of the rug be pulled out from under your feet. It's kind of what it sounds like could possibly happen here. You want to check your contract carefully. And obviously, Becky is probably, I imagine she's still working on this. So if you have any of your own cell phone saving tips, you can send them over to her. She's B Worley on Twitter, at B Worley. So hit her up and let her know where you fall on this.
Well, after the break, we'll have a little more news and TNT's fan of the day. But first, let's take a minute to thank Igloo, the sponsor of this episode. Igloo is an intranet, but not the intranet that you're used to. Igloo is one destination. It's where you log on in the morning and where you spend your day. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. Anyone can add content based on their permissions with drag-and-drop widgets and a WYSIWYG editor. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds over SSL with 256-bit encryption. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, and file sharing solutions like Google Drive and Dropbox. It's used by large enterprises and growing companies like User Testing, BDO, American Family Insurance, and ATP World Tour. Try it free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And when you sign up through our link, you can get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. That's igloosoftware.com/TWIT, and we thank them for their support.
All right, our TNT fan of the day is Charles G. Peterson, who writes, I use this setup while working at night. I also listen to many other Twit podcasts. Along with a picture of that's an iPhone plugged into a Lumsing Bluetooth speaker. So, excellent. Use what you got. I've never heard of Lumsing before, to be honest. I don't know where that sits on the level of Bluetooth speakers. I imagine it makes the audio loud, and that's what's most important. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself, your setup, and your Bluetooth speaker. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we'll find it.
And finally, tonight, we should tell you that work networking website LinkedIn says that hackers are trying to sell information from a massive hack dating back to 2012. The company says this is not a new breach, but at 117 million login credentials. That's what was found online. It's likely that the break-in was bigger than previously believed. Writing on Twitter, security expert Troy Hunt says the data dump for sale is very likely legit. So if you haven't changed your LinkedIn password since 2012, now would probably be a good time.
Yeah, and I think they're saying that they're going to send out, you know, the password reset. But anytime I hear this, even if I don't know, you know, I hear this and they say that they're going to send out a password reset or whatever, I still change it anyways, just to be safe because you never know. Apparently, the people that took this data are trying to sell the entire haul for 5 Bitcoin, which only really amounts to around $2,200, which seems kind of low from, in my opinion. I guess I don't know what things go for on the illegal, you know, hacked ID market.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Seems kind of low.
I mean, and there's no reason you wouldn't have like credit card information in LinkedIn, as far as I know. But it was people who use that password somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, I'm sure if you get that kind of a haul, it's very easy, I would imagine, to run some sort of a script that, you know, can go to some of the biggest websites that would carry some sort of a payload that would be worth something and just try some of those IDs and passwords over there as well. And you never know what you're going to find. So
yeah, it's true. Like, sometimes, you know, I've had some great passwords in the past, and it's so tempting to use them again and again, but you know you can't.
No, password manager, use it. Right. Get in the habit of it. It changes your life.
It does. It changes your life.
Yes. Oh, man, it enriches things. It makes you so happy. It actually honestly does, because passwords are annoying. It's so annoying to have to remember to enter in passwords that are secure and to remember them all across the board. Password manager just kind of, you know, it makes a really good password and you don't have to remember it. So honestly, it's one of my favorite things in the past couple of years, that a fingerprint reader on a phone is really good for. It makes the whole process seamless.
Exactly. So you are going to be at Google I.O. for the next 2 days.
Yes.
Soaking up the Googliness.
Trying not to get a sunburn. Thankfully, I've avoided that today, but you never know. Two more days, at least one more full day, and then part of Friday. But it's outdoors. The whole thing is outdoors. So you're in the sun, and we'll see how that goes.
Well, if we didn't cover it enough on this show, you also did Twig right before this, so people can subscribe and download that. And then there's also a special. And when you come back on Monday, we'd love to hear everything that you have absorbed. And please, no sunburn.
All right. I will try my best to not get a sunburn. Thank you.
So tomorrow's guest will be Lindsay Turrentine from CNET. And TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leaving us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. You can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. And you can find me. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks so much to our technical director back at the studio anyways. I'm assuming it's Alex, but it could be anybody. And all the folks who help us produce the show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see y'all tomorrow. I don't know how the high five's going to work, but I think we can do it.